Let's turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. That's where we'll be spending our time. Wednesday night, we talked a little bit, just in an introductory way, about the book of Ecclesiastes. We go back and we think on those things for just a moment, wanting your input here, just in short thoughts. What is the book of Ecclesiastes? What is it about? What is its theme? Where are we going with this? What would you say? How to view life. All right? What else can you say? We're going to come to a conclusion after a whole lot of other discussion on what our view of life should be. Rick? Okay, and the purpose of life. All right? What are some of the most common remarks that you might hear some say about the book of Ecclesiastes? Depressing. Yeah. You know what's weird? I mean, I've read several things, and that's one of the first things that's always said about this depressing book. The comment came up several times in class Wednesday night. I'd never thought of it so much that way. And just perspective, you know, different folks are going to read things, pull some different things. And I think maybe it's because, I mean, when you read all the way through and you come to the end, I think it's not so depressing. I think when you start off, when you're trying to answer, you know, what is this all about, life? You know, what is life all about? Well, it kind of is depressing. You know, when you just look at it from life's perspective, it's like, you know, no matter how hard you work, someone else is going to take it away. No matter how long you live, you're still going to die. I mean, all of that is depressing when you just, if that's as far as you look, is life under the sun. But the bigger picture, I guess I always think about the end result of this, is pretty good. You know, there's a relationship with God, and that's what we have to be striving for. Yeah. Sure. Sure. That's right. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, that we can see the other side of this, that there's reasons to take courage from the things that we read in the book of Ecclesiastes. But the only way that we'll find any courage from this book is we have to look at life beyond life under the sun. Because if that's all we see is life under the sun, let me tell you what, I don't care how good it is here, it ain't much. Because it's going to come to an end. And so we've got to get out of the paradigm of just looking at things as life under the sun. I think that's what Solomon's going to teach us in this. Neil? Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Exactly. And you know, Solomon did that to a degree that most of us can never attain. All right, I mean, he experienced everything that could be experienced, so to speak, in life under the sun. And so there's some things, you know, there's some things you don't necessarily have to try for yourself. It's been kind of a hard lesson for me to learn at times. You know, I mean, sometimes you can listen to what someone else has to say about a matter, and you can learn something from that. Well, I'm hoping that that's what we can kind of get out of this study here as well. Sometimes you hear people ask, you know, what is life about? You know, just what is the purpose of life? And sometimes, on occasion, to talk with someone who is perhaps dealing with the problems of life or issues of life, that's a point or a question that comes up. I mean, just what is this exercise about anyway? You know, life. You know, what's the purpose? And very often it's someone who is really down and someone who's really discouraged. And quite frankly, from their paradigm, from their view of life, they have every reason to be discouraged. Because no matter how good life is, it ain't much. If we are seeking to find happiness solely from this life, physical things, we're not going to get there. I mean, it's amazing to me. You know, people that have what many others are looking for in life. They have found fame, they have fortune, they have popularity. So often are people that are still just so unhappy. You notice that? I mean, we see that in the news. I mean, that's pretty prevalent. Because they don't really have life figured out. I think Ecclesiastes helps us to figure out life. I told you those here on Wednesday night, years ago when I was, you know, working secular work, I was working in a factory and had a little bit of time in between machines cycling that I was running, and I read through the book of Ecclesiastes a number of times. I would probably been in my 20s, late 20s at that time, I suppose. And I read through it, and I thought, I need to do that again. And I read through it again and again and again. It would take me all night with what little short time I had between machines that were running. I'd read a little verse or two at a time and kept that up all night. And over the course of time, I read through Ecclesiastes a lot because I needed it a lot. I mean, there were some things that I was learning from the book of Ecclesiastes that I needed to get a hold of. Still don't know that I have the best grasp on some of it. But I needed to learn some things. You know, making sense out of life is not easy. I think sometimes for young people that's particularly true, but as I say that, I know some old people that still don't have it figured out because they're looking at the wrong source, looking for the wrong place to try to find what is life all about. It's interesting in chapter 1. We're looking at chapter 1 today. As the preacher begins, he says, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher, "utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." You think he believes life is meaningless at this point? Or vanity of vanities, as some texts would say? I mean, here is Solomon, I picture him as a man who has some age about him now and who has experienced all that life has to offer, and he's saying it's vanity. It's just vanity. You know, there's nothing more that can be said is kind of his conclusion here. Life under the sun, what is it? It doesn't matter what you have, it's just vanity. It's vanity on top of vanities is what he says. It's only when we look beyond life under the sun that we can find hope, that we can find a perspective in life. I get the impression sometimes that there are few in this life that truly have a good perspective of life. Do you know what I mean by that? I mean, if you're living, if you're breathing and you're looking around, you have life within you, but many have little life. Because their perspective of some things is just so skewed. And I can see how we can enter into life that way. But I'm hoping that as time goes on, we gain some perspective in life. Fulfillment in life can only be found in the Lord. And it seems like it took a while for Solomon to figure that out. And I'm, you know, even Solomon, you know, I'm not sure how he ended his life as far as his relationship with God. I mean, and that's what we talked some Wednesday night just about who wrote the book. And most would draw the conclusion that it was Solomon for all the reasons we talked about the other night. I mean, Solomon started his kingship of Israel as a man who knew God and a man who had a relationship with God. So much so that whatever he asked for, God provided for him, including that request for wisdom. You know, which just made Solomon exceedingly wise. So much so that there were those from other nations who would travel many days' journey to come and to sit at the feet of Solomon. Wisdom that came from God. And yet Solomon still didn't have everything figured out, did he? I mean, his whole life was an experiment where he tried everything there was to try. With the wisdom of being able to discern when it was all done. Well, that's not much. No matter how great or grand it was, still his conclusion could have been, it's just, well, that's not much. What else is there? And he kept looking. Somewhere along the line, we read in 1 Kings near the end of Solomon's life, he had really moved far away from God, which is so frustrating to me and disappointing. I mean, here was one who in many ways started off living and acting like his father, King David, had done, a man who, you know, had a heart for God. But somewhere along the line, Solomon's life changed. Why, would you suppose, did his life change? What happened? That's always a concern. That so often is a problem with riches. It's not the riches themselves that's the problem. It's the desire for them and what they can do. What else would you say about Solomon?
Well, he loved many foreign women.
Oh.
Foreign women took him away from the God that he knew to
yeah.
other gods. And he built temples for them.
Yeah. Appears he worshipped them too. Yeah. Some have suggested that the book of Ecclesiastes was at the end of Solomon's life. I mean, when else would he draw conclusions to the matter? But at the end of his life, these kind of conclusions. This is sort of a stepping back and looking at life, and here's the final conclusion of all things. And some have suggested, and we don't know if this is true or not, we don't know at all, really, that, you know, this was Solomon's repentance. This was when Solomon realized that the folly of some of the things he had done, the mistake of the many wives, the foreign wives that had led him away from God, and this was his coming back to God, saying there's nothing else that matters but fearing God and keeping his commandments. Well, that might be right. I don't know that. I mean, the documentary part of the story in the Kings doesn't leave us with that conclusion. But you wonder just a little bit. Is this the last thing that was written by Solomon and about him?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, he knew he was wise. He knew he had wisdom from God. But you know what? We can have wonderful blessings from God that in time we forget where they came from. And that becomes an issue.
I don't know about you, but sometimes when I read Ecclesiastes, it almost appears as if he has an inward struggle going on.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about all this negative stuff, and then he'll turn and say, but this,
yeah.
this is helpful. This is what you need to focus on.
Right.
You
know, it's not just chapter 12 that gives some conclusions. I mean, we'll see as we go through. There are some other times, you know, right in the middle of the story, he says, but this didn't really matter anyway, you know, or something to that type, you know. I mean, he's drawing conclusions all the way through. Then he makes his final conclusion that we read of in chapter 12. I think that's right. You know, what you're saying, Rick, there are a number of times that he's drawing his conclusions as we go through. Now, I mean, were those life conclusions that he knew all along, or was this at the end of his life that he's kind of going, reviewing all these things in his mind, and he's saying about all these great things, but it didn't really matter anyway, you know, because, I mean, here's the relationship we should have. You know, I don't know what else to say about that, really. Daryl? Yeah. 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 Lends to some problems. Yeah. Yeah, that could be. I mean,
looking forward to something and you do it, you get it done.
It's now what? It's almost a letdown when you get something done, right?
It seems as though he accomplished great things, but it seems
Mm-hmm. He's still looking for something. That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Which we'll see that as we get into it a couple or three chapters into it, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter what you have and whatever you've worked hard for and what you've accomplished and what you've pulled together. Yeah, I mean, you're not taking it with you. You know, you're going to leave that with someone else. And that can be kind of, to me, as I read that, it's like he's pretty frustrated about that. You know, that someone else is going to get this who didn't even work for it. Isn't that true today?
Government.
Yeah, they're going to get their share plus some, you know, for sure. A friend of mine is a realtor, has been for many years, one of the elders in the church back at Oakton. And we've talked a number of times about, he used to do a lot of auctions, you know, and he says, you know, it's kind of a sad thing. He says, you do like a farm auction or something like that, a big sale on Saturday, you know, it's advertised in the paper and people come from miles around to this big auction because everything's being sold out. Most of the time, because the kids cannot agree who's going to get what. He said, most of the time that's what happens. And they finally come to the point where a lawyer has said the only way to do this is everything has to be sold and to split the money up, forget it. And that's kind of what it's come to, which that's just a sad scenario in itself. But he said, that's life. That's what happens. But he says, you go to an auction and, you know, start at 10 o'clock in the morning, and by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, the auction is done. 4 or 5 hours. A man who has lived all of his life on a farm, who has raised his family there, who over time he's made a living and the farm has increased in value and he's accumulated tools and equipment and he's had a few nice things he's got along the way. It's taken him a lifetime to acquire these things. And in 4 hours it's gone. And it's gone to people who have bought it for, you know, little maybe of what he's got into it, and they don't have the appreciation for it that he had because he worked hard, you know, to get those things and to have those things. Even his children, in some cases, this is the hardest part, even his children, they don't appreciate what he's had or how hard he's had to work, but they're there standing in line when the check is written at the end of the auction. And I've thought about that a lot of times and thought, what a sad commentary on life that depicts for us. But Ray, that's what I think of when I read that passage you're referring to, of what Solomon is saying. Just some things for us to be thinking about here as we roll our way into this. You know, in verses 1 and 2, there is kind of that pessimistic view here of how this letter is beginning. And throughout, if you look at our workbook, kind of helpful on this, kind of breaks Ecclesiastes into maybe 11 issues that is most prominently being dealt with. There is, you know, this just the idea of human existence and the idea of, is this it? I mean, there must be something more to just this life. The idea of human wisdom, that you can never learn it all. I mean, here was a man who was wiser than most, wiser than all, and realizes that you still can't learn it all. There is the issue of human pleasure, that sure, there's some things in this life that we can have fun with. But when the fun is over, it's over. I mean, it doesn't go on lasting, you know. The matter of human labor, where does it really get you? You know, you can work hard all your life, and in the end, someone else is going to get it. You know, someone who doesn't appreciate what you've done. Human rivalry, sometimes success brings more envy than joy. You know, that even if you have success, there are others who envy you. Or if you see others having greater success than you, the problem is with you sometimes toward them. The matter of human greed, having much feeds the lust for more. Yeah, I've seen that happen. You probably have too. Those who it seems have so much who want that much more and they want yours too. You know, it's an issue that creeps up on us sometime. Human fame is brief and uncertain. You know, you think about the rising stars who find fame, you know, and popularity, and because they've had a hit TV show or a movie or they have a song on the radio, and 5 years from now, in some cases, you know, nobody knows their name. You know, there's not satisfaction in that. Wealth, it never satisfies. We've talked about that some. Coveting, it does not produce what it promises. You know, the idea of, we sometimes have insatiable appetites for more even things that do not belong to us. Human foolishness, we can be fools in life, seeing and wanting the wrong things, and it only camouflages what's going to be a very sad ending to life if that's all we're looking for in this life. Human rewards. The wicked seem to be rewarded so greatly sometimes. How can that be? How the wicked can seemingly have more wealth, they have more friends, they have more in this life than what the righteous have in some cases. How can that be? You know, this is the question that Solomon is asking. And so all of these things, you know, at the end of all of these, he says, vanity of vanities. None of these things, you know, really matter at all. And so, you know, our writer in our workbook has kind of drawn some conclusions for us to think about here. There are three causes to his pessimism, he says. Solomon is viewing life selfishly. I mean, his first view of life, as we're reading through the book here, is that he's, what can I attain? What can I get? I don't mind working hard for it, just what can I get out of life? And when we're looking at getting as opposed to giving, we are going to have some internal problems. It's going to cause us some issues in time. And Solomon came to see that. He viewed life apart from God. This was so much of his experiments had nothing to do with a relationship with God. And if we approach life that way, our bucket's going to come up empty every time. Now, we may come up with a bucket full of gold and wealth. We may find popularity there's a lot of things we can find in life, but at the end, the bucket's going to be poured out, and there's nothing there. It'll be empty. If we simply view life for what life, this life has to offer in the way of physical things. It took a while for Solomon to get back to that point, you know, there as well. Solomon begins this book by viewing life as life, you know, you have birth and then you have death. That's life. And if that's our existence, and that's what some are really grappling with sometimes when they ask, you know, what is this all about anyway? What is life? And if that's as far as we can see and view life, is from birth to the grave, it ain't much. Doesn't matter how much we have in wealth in this life, if that's all life is, it's pretty shallow. There's nothing to it. And it seems like it takes Solomon a long time to kind of get that understood. What are your thoughts?
Someone put it this way. They said, if you look at life from the under the sun perspective alone, it's as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. This is as good as it gets. With everything it has, you know, with the suffering and the pain and the death and the agony, it's as good as it gets. But if you look at it with a heavenly perspective, this life's as bad as it gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good is to come, really. And I much prefer viewing life that way. That, I mean, even if life is good for us on this life, what there is to come is so much better. Offers just so much more. Solomon helps to make the point that God has placed eternity in the heart of man. In chapter 3, and let's see, verse 11. He's speaking that God has made everything beautiful in time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. There's that passage and some others in Scripture that, in my mind, gives me the view and the idea that God has made man in such a way that we're looking for something more. And I don't mean just something more in this life. But we know and understand, I think innately, that there's got to be more to it than this. You know, Paul said in Acts chapter 17 that God, who has given us life and breath and all things, who has made all things, you know, has made us in such a way that we might grope after him. Verse 27, I believe it is. That he has made us in such a way that we are looking for something. In fact, we are looking for him. And as that text goes on to saying, he is not far from each one of us. Solomon knew that 2,500 years before the apostle said that. And it took him a while perhaps to draw that conclusion, but he is saying that God has also set eternity in the hearts of man. There is something that we are looking for. If we don't turn it off, if we don't say, I don't care what God says, I don't care if there is a God, I'm just living this life for what it is. If we want to know God, he will show himself to us. He will show us the way. Because God has set eternity in the heart of man. And I find that to be just an interesting statement, an interesting thought for us to kind of work through our mind as we go through the rest of this writing right here. And maybe that's why Solomon says a number of times something about fearing God. That there should be, and how many times do the New Testament writers say something of a similar nature? The need of fearing God or fear God and keep his commandments. God has made us in such a way that we should seek him, and we will seek him if we don't deny ourselves that. And to fear God. Again. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4, our outward man is decaying, but our inner self is being renewed.
Right, day by day. That's right.
We have to just face those disappointments along the way, renewing our inner self.
You know, it's the idea, perhaps, of life lessons that are being learned. Some learn life lessons quicker. I've had to have several lessons numerous times. And that's frustrating to me when I think, I've already been down this road and it didn't work well the first 12 times I did this. You know, life lessons are slower for some of us than others. But life lessons are real. And it seems to me that Ecclesiastes is the life lessons of Solomon. And kind of like what I said earlier, you know, sometimes if you can sit down and listen to someone who has some experience in life, you can learn some things so you don't have to do the same things that they have done. You know, I mean, I've tried telling my children, I've tried telling other people I've talked with, listen, this doesn't work real well. You know, take it from experience. This hurts when you do this. You know, or if you do this, you move farther away from God. You don't have to try it. I'm telling you, this is what happens. I think that's what Solomon's saying, don't you? I mean, he is saying, I mean, here God has put within him incredible wisdom. Others have flocked to him to hear the judgments that he could make. This is his judgment on life. It's like God is saying to us, listen to him. You know, we don't have to experience all of the negatives just to know that, man, that really hurts. Solomon already said so. There's some things we just don't have to. I know I've always said, you know, you got to try it to find out. That's why I have gray hair at a young age. Yeah. Okay? For mistakes that have been made, right? Don't say anything about young age right here. Right? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And if man just looks at life under the sun, falling himself, he sees.
Yeah.
Unless he looks.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the paradigm shift that I hope we can make in life, is that if all we can see is life under the sun, it ain't much. no matter what we have in life, no matter how rich we may be, no matter how much popularity we have, if all we can see is life under the sun, we don't have much. And Solomon is trying to help us to look beyond this life. And even as he said, God has also set eternity into the hearts of men, and how we need to look on beyond this life.
And then, on a broader scale, you look at the world, and the world's cultures and religions, if they reject God, they still have this problem of trying to find eternity in there because it's in their hearts.
Yeah.
So they go to some other religion to try to
soothe
eternity.
Yeah. They know there's something. There's some kind of a need.
It's a testimony to the fact that God made us to seek Him.
That's right. That's right. And yet, part of Solomon's conclusion with that, while he says eternity, God said eternity in the hearts of men, Solomon's conclusion at the end is fear God and keep His commandments. That's how we get close to Him. Yeah.
God, as Les was indicating, created man and woman to live in harmony with Him.
Yeah.
There's a void in our hearts.
That's right. Something is missing.
Something is missing. And you know, we try to fill it with stuff that's empty.
That's right. That's right. And that void, I think you guys are right on the right track with this. You know, there is a void that we have tried to fill up in our lives that will never fill the void. We cannot find real happiness in any way except with God. And it's easy for us to look at it from the perspective of the world and say, yeah, they are really missing something. This class isn't about they. It's we who are in this class, right? And what are we missing in life? Because we've got the wrong perspective on some things. Because our relationship with God is not what it needs to be. What are we still looking for? What are we still seeking in life? That even if we accomplish it in the end, it's just vanity of vanities. Without a relationship with God that is honest and that is true, according to His will, this life can be nothing but, in the end, vanity of vanities. It's all meaningless. I mean, I'm hoping that the study will bring us, draw us nearer to God. That's why Solomon wrote it, I'm convinced. Let's go back here in chapter 1. And let's look at the next section here. We've only read two verses here today so far. That's the first bill, right? Yeah. Verse 3, beginning. What does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome. More than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was already there long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old. Even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. In some ways, that is kind of a depressing read right there. His view here on some things. On the other side, he's basically saying life is more than physical existence. There's some good things beyond this. You know, things on this life that appear to be substantial is really not all that great. There's not any great substance here. He's looking beyond that. You know, so, you know, at the end of life, like we said before, what can we take with us from this life? Well, nothing. It just doesn't work. I saw a picture one time of a hearse going down the road and it had a U-Haul trailer hooked on the back of it. You know, it was a joke, yeah. I mean, we know it doesn't work that way. You know, it just you can't take it with you. And so the point being, life is not about the things that are physical. Verse 4 kind of talks about life cycles, so to speak. Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Kind of futility of life's cycle. It just kind of goes on and on and on. That's right. Yeah. But you're going to die. You know, and it's like, that can be depressing. And without an eternal hope, that is depressing. If this life is all there is, if this life is all that it offers. You know, we get the newspaper from back home. You know, this comes out twice a week, you know. But it kind of keep up with some things that's going on. Friends in the newspaper and stuff. You open the first page, you know what's on the first page? The obits. Yeah. Let's kind of go through, see if anybody I know has passed away. You know, sometimes there is. You know, and it's kind of one of those life circumstances. Or those, you know, back home, the local radio station, 7 o'clock in the morning, news comes on, the first thing that they have on the news, local obituaries. That's how they start the news. What a way to start the day. And I mean, there's people that I know, it's like they got to listen to 7 o'clock news to see who died. You know? And I never got into that habit, you know? It's like, you know, listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you get that point where you're looking to see if your name's in there. That's right. Yeah.
You're not old enough yet.
Yeah. You say, I'm going to be doing that more. Don't tell me that. There is a life cycle. It is true. There is the fact that there is a life cycle, and there comes that point where if you live long, you know that there's not many more days. And even if you're young, there's not many more days. I mean, we just look at life in the big picture. And here's, you know, just Solomon's point. What does a man gain from all of his labor which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Oh, the futility of it all is kind of what he is saying. And even just the monotony of just life. You know, the sun comes up over there every morning and it goes down over here every night, and tomorrow it's going to do it again. And the next day it's just going to do it again. Over and over and over. You know, I mean, why can't the sun come up over here the next day? Doesn't work that way. It's just a cycle of life that he's talking about, you know. And, you know, it's just kind of a almost like a crummy existence, he's saying. Is this all there is, you know, here on planet Earth? Is this all that it has to offer? You know, even like the weather patterns, the wind blows to the south, then it turns and it goes to the north. Around and around it goes. Ever returning on its course. And the streams, they all flow into the sea, and yet the sea's never full. Because it evaporates out of there and it goes back and it comes again. Just life cycles. Is that all there is? I mean, it's interesting to me. I remember in science class when I was a kid, you know, talking about the life cycle of water. They probably talk about things more exciting today, but you know, when I was in grade school, I can remember the thing up there on the wall, you know, that it rains up in the mountains and the water comes down the hills and it goes to the creeks and the ponds and it works its way out here to the ocean and then it evaporates and it comes back up and it does it again. Solomon knew that 2,500 years ago. We could have just read the Bible and figured that out. But we paid scientists a lot of money to make those drawings for us to say that this is how it works. And it still works that way. Just life cycles that come and go. And all things are worrisome, more than I can even say. He was just wore out with these things. It's like, this is just life, you know. That this is all that is. Is this it? That this is the cycles of life. Well, there might be some more we have to look at beyond that. We're going to kind of take up at that point maybe on Wednesday night, that middle part there of chapter 1. And kind of work our way through. We'll be looking at chapter 2. I don't know if we'll get there Wednesday or not. And there's some questions in our book. They're not the kind of questions that you just necessarily fill out, you know. It's like, just think about this a minute. Because some of those we, in some general way, we may kind of talk about. And it'll help you with some discussion on Wednesday. I appreciate your good comments. If you can, please, let's move up here to the front.